morning, Bill Mackay.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Kiwi Build, it feels like forever since it was reset, which is an interesting word. I wonder if they had a big brainstorm as to what word to actually use. But anyway, what is your assessment of whether it is reset, abandoned, sort of just limping along but without any targets anymore? What's your take?
Well, I've really been looking forward to it. You know, this is the government's year of delivery. We know Kiwi Builds had problems. So it finally got announced and there was really nothing to get excited about. So more a masterclass and apology than a vision of what's next. So I just found it very disappointing. They dropped the target number of houses. I'll come back to that. I think that's actually could be a good thing. Focus more on quality of houses. Focus
on the gap between what you said you want and what you're getting. That's the reason for dropping that one.
Yeah, perhaps have a target that's related to a percentage of people's income rather than just the number of houses. And I think that target has caused them lots of problems. But also, you know, in this reset, they did relax some rules for buyers. They've set aside $400 million for a progressive home ownership program, whatever that is. But hopefully, I think that's foreshadowing a rent-to-buy plan, which is something that I'm really keen on. But that was really the lone ray of hope for me. And we will get more detail announced later this year, but I won't be holding my breath over it. The fundamental problem with Kiwi Build was it was just a bright idea that some politicians came up with several years ago with some, you know, nice sounding numbers aimed at young working and middle class voters. And there were several flaws in the concept, apart from the part that they hadn't done adequate research talking to people who actually knew how to build houses. So the fundamental problem with Kiwi Build is that it's perpetuated this idea of suburban housing as a solution. And I think that was a bit of a deliberate echo of the first Labor government, you know, that famously built all those state houses. But we're a much more diverse population now, and suburban housing is just not what many people are after. And we don't have that command and control style economy that first Labor government and a couple of governments after that had, that allowed governments to do huge developments using state resources. We've surrendered all that to the market. And the second issue here is the market's not interested in doing affordable housing, even though some of them do say that, but the government's ended up basically subsidising developers, and the result's been expensive houses remote from where people work and play, and people just haven't been buying them. And the market, and Phil Twyford to an extent, were continuing to argue for opening up more metropolitan boundaries for more land, but we've got enough suburbs. We don't need any more suburban sprawl. And if people aren't buying expensive houses remote from Auckland, opening up the suburbs, opening up the metropolitan boundaries to do more of that is just not going to work.
I think they are buying them, though. The problem is the price. I mean, if you come south to where we are in the Hutt Valley and beyond the developed Hutt Valley, there's mass developments going on there. There's mass developments going on north of Wellington City, up around Aotea and Porirua and the satellite suburbs. The issue isn't that the demand is there for accommodation, even with some travel. I mean, even in a place like Wainuiomata, over the hill from Lower Hutt. The demand is there. The problem is nothing they did could bring down the price, and that's because they could not get enough of the houses into the market. Did they not just come up against the same constraints the private sector had been telling them were there all along?
Well, yeah, that's all true to an extent, but I think we do have another alternative, and that private sector is very much focused on doing what they've always done, which is building kind of like new low-rise suburban developments. So I think kind of like, you know, the other so I'll come back to that, but the other problem with Kiwi Build was it was centrist. It was just aiming at some voters in the middle, and it didn't address the whole spectrum of accommodation issues. We don't, as I've said before, we don't have a housing crisis. We have a accommodation crisis, from homelessness and student accommodation and young worker accommodation at one end, the fact that 30% of our population rent, and that's growing, and people living longer, next generation, baby boomers not ready for the retirement home, who are looking for something else. So the big hope for me had been that KiwiBuild would focus more on brownfields in the urban area.
Well, you were very pleased with the former Ockham Development's boss, Helen O'Sullivan, going to run KiwiBuild for a while, because Ockham was an example of what you're talking about. I don't think there's any there's no garages or car parks in Ockham.
Mm.
So were you seeing that as the start of possibly looking at a different way of doing it?
Yeah. And they were targeting what they called the missing middle, because in our big cities, Auckland in particular, you've got, if you want to live in an apartment, you're going to be in a very tall high-rise building, or you're going to be in the townhouse in the suburbs somewhere. And they went for 4 to 5 story buildings in the middle that were in inner city suburbs, on bus routes, near shops. And I think, you know, to come back to that question that you were talking about before, this is also why kind of like more suburban housing will not solve this issue, because most of the people to whom it's an issue don't actually want to live in a one-story house. And I went to Matamata to give a talk last week, and I drove past Drury and just before the Bombay Hills, looking at a whole bunch of these proposed developments. And I've got 3 sons. None of them want to live there miles
away.
Here's
another challenge, though. If you stay in the big, expensive cities, again, we'll talk about some of the provinces who are beginning to develop.
Well, like Bites there as well.
Nelson will be another example where the city is continuing to sprawl and is forecast to. But stay in the big, expensive cities like Auckland and Wellington. Again, there's a low-rise development happening smack in the centre of town here. 120-plus accommodations. I'm trying to think how they describe them. I mean, townhouse will be the nearest thing to compare them to, but they've got their own particular marketing gig for them. But again, I think the starting price is $795,000. That's never going to be what KiwiBuild can call an affordable home.
And that's why another reason that I was keen on going KiwiBuild directing itself more to brownfields and 4 to 5 story buildings is that suddenly you're looking at something like 400,000 plus.
Yeah, but the land value smack in the middle of a city like Auckland or Wellington is what blows you out of the water before you even start building.
Well, not smack in the middle. So, for instance, in Auckland, we're talking about the kind of outer isthmus. So we're talking about Dominion Road, Sandringham Road, Great North Road, New North Road. People have this perception that they're built up, but you go for a drive all the way down there and you will see a whole bunch of very dated two-storey 1940s state houses, some used car lots, and the land is not that expensive there.
And once is it zoned under the urban under the previous Auckland plan? Is it zoned to allow those developments?
Under the unitary plan, there's a whole lot on these routes. They have deliberately upzoned it to allow you to go up to kind of like 4 to 5 stories. And on those sites as well, once you've got that number of apartment buildings on that land and then you do the numbers, the land is not actually the issue. And the land is, throughout New Zealand, the issue. It's the fundamental issue in terms of affordability, with the second one being the cost of construction in New Zealand, that the industry is always arguing it's not that bad, but as everyone else knows, it's bloody expensive.
They almost pitch at the impossible end of the market in the centre, because they are building state houses. I think the figure I saw is 2,200. Yeah. It's more than they've been built for ages.
Oh, yes.
So they're doing that, they chose to go into a place where the people's expectations, the purchasers' expectations, versus the price that was going to be achievable for location, land cost and building, almost put them in an impossible bind.
Yep.
And that is kind of what the industry had been telling them. If it were viable and doable, we'd be doing it.
Well, you know, we've got this old saying that everyone wants it cheap, fast and good, but you can only ever have two of those. And that brings me to my next point, which is, there are a lot of kind of housing in New Zealand. They are doing a lot at that end of the spectrum now, but I'm worried about the quality. So my big hope now, to leave everyone with a bit of hope, is HUDA, the Urban Development Authority, now Kāinga Ora. And I'll talk about that next time. I think they've got the possibility of really being a game changer, but how will quality be assured in there? That's my big worry.
Well, what we're hearing from within the building industry and from the trades, the plumbing and electricians industry, is that the drive to cut costs on imported products is just building up yet another debacle. And in fact, they were pointing out the fact that some of the intensive Christchurch work that was done is already revealing what's being stored up there. They've got their own interests as well. But let's pick up on that next time on what Huda's planning to do. Thanks very much, Bill Mackay of Auckland University.